Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chet Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Zeira Amar Shmuel, libein sakin." If someone made a sakin super hot, as Rashi points out over here, this is white hot in the Gemara, which he says is the equivalent to what we call red hot. But obviously, those are stages in heat. First, it turns red, and then it turns white. But in the Gemara, the term libun, which means to make it white hot, is actually red hot, means to heat it up to a very high temperature. So here you have a knife that was made extremely hot. V'shachat ba. And you do shchita with the knife. Shchitato k'shera. The shchita is a good shchita. Chiduda kodem libuna. Because the sharpness of the knife precedes the heat of the knife. What we're worried about here, obviously, is that the animal doesn't die from the heat and the injury from the heat, but rather from the shchita itself. So the question is, the movement of the knife back and forth, is that successful at getting through the shchita before the heat of the knife causes some problem? And as Bali et Tosfot note over here, mashma mikan, she'im b'shat shchita nikev aveshet, that while you're doing shchita, a hole comes into the vesh, into the esophagus, keneged mash shachat, then it's a treifa. So we're going to learn later on that for an animal to be a treifa, with regards to the vesh, the esophagus, you need is simply a hole. Any hole in the esophagus is fatal, and that makes them into a trefa. For the trachea, it has to be a rove of one of the rings to be missing in order for it to be problematic. So by the trachea, it's easier to get through without having another problem, because by the time you get through, even if there's some damage from the heat, that's not an issue, because small damage to the trachea is not an issue. By the esophagus, it is much more significant or serious. And so if you are cutting and for whatever reason you did some damage to the animal in that cutting part, so that's why a nick in the knife and other types of things that cause damages to the animal while you're doing the shchita, that would render it a treifa before you complete the shchita. And so the same thing is the question that is being questioned and answered in the statement is, if the chidudah, the sharpness of the knife, precedes the heat of the knife, then it's dying by shchita and not dying because of some problem or complication because of the heat of the knife. Vayika tzadim. So what about the fact that you have the sides? So when you move the knife back and forth, the knife has the sharpness of the knife, but then there are the sides of the blade. And as you move the sides through the cut of the shchita, then it causes a burning. And this is where you see in Rashi, which is what led the Tosfot to say what they're saying, is that if that's the case, while it's going through, nimsechi nisrifa kodem shchita, that side of the blades causes a burning of the simanim before the shchita is complete. Sharei veshet nikuvato b'mashu, as we just noted, that a esophagus, in order to be a treifa, just needs a single piercing in order to be litareif, usreifa kenekevu. And burning it with the equivalent of a nekev. So if the sides of the knife touch the esophagus before the sharpness of the knife got through the esophagus, that means that you've created the equivalent of a hole in the esophagus before the shchita is complete. My answer is beit shchita mirvach ravach. That as you're cutting, the placement of the cut starts to widen. As the cut goes through, that area expands and moves it away from the knife itself. Because of that, then the heat is not a problem. Even though, as many of the Rishonim point out, that when you have a knife that has a nick on the side of it, we still say that is problematic. That's either because the nick is very close to the blade, and so therefore it doesn't have time to separate away, or over here we're talking about a nick that grabs or captures onto the shchita. So even if it's mirvach ravach, it doesn't help you out in this situation, as opposed to heat, where any distance already will cause a reduction in the damage that the heat does, and therefore it's successful at removing the problem of treifa, whereas with a nick in the knife or a catch in the knife, that would not be the case. So now, ibailu, libein shipud. If someone heated up a poker, vehikabo, and then it hits an individual, mishum shchin nidon, o mishum nichva nidon. What is the problem now that arises out of this? What we're speaking about here is tzarat habasar. These are the nigaim that we speak about in Parshat, Tazria, and Mitzora. Over there, there are different types of nigaim. The nigei basar, there's the nigei arosh, vazakan, there are different locations on the body. Two of the parshiot that are mentioned there are one of shchin and one of michva. The parshiot are identical with the exception of the fact that one's called shchin and one's called michva. The chazal tell us that the difference between them is the way in which they cause an injury to happen on the individual. That shchin and michva are heating of the body, according to Rashi, where the skin gets heated up or hot, and there's an injury associated with it. And Rashi says, shchin, bayidei chom shemichamei machmat koach ahaka'ah, that shchin is heat in that area because of the power of the hit to that area. Umichva ba machmat ha'ur. On the other hand, a michva comes because of the heat of an item that's placed on it. It's a burn. So both of those are injuries to the skin. And then, as they resolve themselves, there's a possibility of tzarat. The possibility of tzarat arises because of, possibly you would say, an infection that grows over there. There's white, something that grows over there. And then, on top of that, there are simanim that indicate that it's tzarat and not just the healing of the wound. And that is pisayon, means that it starts to spread instead of contracting. You would assume if it was healing that it should get smaller and smaller rather than get bigger. And number two is white hairs that grow there. If you have white hairs that grow there, that's an indication of tumah, because that means that the whatever's there is influencing not just the wound or the wound healing, that there's actually some sort of negative influence that is being imposed by this tzarat, because now the hairs that grow out of it are white instead of the normal color of the hairs that come out of the body of the individual. Those are types of tzarat. So now the question we have here is that a person took a poker, which they heated up, and then they hit the individual with the poker. So now when you get the wound, is the wound a wound from heat because of the ur, because of the heat of the poker itself, which would be a type of tzarat hamichva, or is it because of the power, the impact of the hit from the poker? Is that what causes the injury? And then the heating of that area because of the blood flow to that area, and then the white blood cells that come to try to repair the area, is that what causes it? And therefore it would be called tzarat shchin. So which of those two is it caused by? Obviously they're asking this because of its similarity to our question. When you have shchita, we spoke about whether it was the sharpness of the knife or the heat of the knife that did the damage. It's the same thing over here. You have something that's hot, but it's also doing damage to the force or the impact that it has on the body itself. That's what the Gemara asks. The mai nafkamina. So why is there any difference? Why does it matter if it's shchin? Or why does it matter if it's michva? L'chedetanya. Shchin u'michva mitamim bishavua echad bishnei simanim. Mishchin u'michva, that type of nega, has 1 week and two simanei tuma, which is sear lavan u'pisayon. I'll come back and explain that in a second. V'lama chilkan ha-katuv. Why does the posuk separate them? If they have the same simanim and the same rules, just put them together. Lomar she'ein mitztarfim zeh im zeh, to come to teach you that they are not mitztaref, that you can't join them together. So if you have two different types of nega, you have a nega mshchin and a nega michva, and neither one of them has the requisite shiur, which is the size of a chatzi pul kigris, that's the size that we're looking for. If it doesn't meet up to that kigris individually, but together they do, then it won't be a nega, it won't be a mitame, because it doesn't meet the minimum threshold, the minimum shi'ur. So that's the reason that we separated the parshiot, even though they're identical, is to tell you that they're not mitzaref, that you can't bring them together to get to the minimum threshold, to the minimum shi'ur. We'll see in a second that there's some other small nafkaminot. The din over here is differentiated from other nigaim. Other nigaim require 2 weeks, not 1 week. That is, if you put somebody into Hezger, you close them up because you look at the nega and it's not clear that there's tuma over here, you have to isolate them, put them in Hezger for a week, and after a week the Kohen comes and takes a look at it. After the week, depending on what happens, then there's a decision. There's certain simanim that automatically make you tamei. For instance, if there is pisayon, spreading. If there is sear lavan that grows over there, and in other nigaim, if there's yellow hair, so that would also be a siman tuma. Or what's called mitchiat chai, there's some healthy basar in the middle and surrounded by this on the outside, that's also a siman tuma. All of those would cause you to be a sora mukhlat, That means for sure it's a negatameh, and then you have to be put into closure, seclusion, until it resolves itself. If on, after the first week you come and take a look at it, and there are no simanei tumah, amad be'enav, nothing's changed. Whatever was there the first week was there the second week, then with other negaim, you lock him up in hezger for another week. He stays in seclusion for another week, and then you check at the end of the second week again. Whereas by shechina mikvah, it's only 1 week. At the end of the first week, there's either simanei tumah, or he is tahor. So simanei tumah we just enumerated here. There are two simanei tumah, sear lavan, if there's white hair in it, or pisayon, or it's spread. Without that, then it's not tameh, and if at the end of the first week there's no change, he is tahor, and he is free to release from being in hezger, because there is no second week. So that's a unique din associated with the shechin and the mikvah, that first of all it's only 1 week, as opposed to others that are 2 weeks, and it's also different in that sear lavan is an indication of tumah, as opposed to sear tzahov by some of the other nigaim, and pisayon is by all nigaim. They have spreading or expanding is problematic and makes you tamei. So then we said the nafkamina is the size, meaning that if they are joining together to create a shiur, they cannot be mitzdareif. Vitanya. And now we have the explanation, which basically goes back to what I described before to help us understand what the question is over here. Ezu shchin vezu michva. What's the difference between shchin and michva? Laka ba'itz. If the injury came from impact, from wood, the Eben, from a stone, the Gefet, from olive peat, the residue of the olive skins that is piled up together, there's a chemical reaction that happens that gives off a tremendous amount of heat. It's one of the items that's actually mentioned in the Gemara and Shabbat with regards to Hatmana. That is Mosif Hevel. It's Hatmana where the heating actually increases because of the chemical reaction that happens to the leftover olive peat. Then when it's piled up or stacked up in big piles, there's a chemical process that releases a tremendous amount of heat. So here's something that could burn, but it's not from fire. So it's a burn or something heating that causes injury, but not a fire-based injury. The chamei tveria, or you got to burn from the hot springs of Tveria. Tosfot over here notes that there is a machloket as to how or why the chamei tveria are hot. One of those opinions is that they pass by pitcho shel gehinom. They pass by the open entrance to Gehinom, and that's how they get heated, which means that they are getting heated by the Eish. The Baal Tosfot speculate over here and say that even according to Rabbi Yossi, who over there says that it's Toldat Ur for the Gabe Shabbat, and then makes it restricted in terms of cooking on Shabbat, nevertheless, Shemakan Ayemoded in Nidon Mishum Shchin. Maybe he would agree over here that it's Shchin, Zolo Mishum Mechva, Kevin Tehai Ur Bidei Shemayim. The difference is it a man-made fire? Or is it a heaven-made fire? So even though the fire makes it into Toldat Ur, maybe over here in this case, he would agree that it's called the Shechin. U'b'chol davar shelo ba machmat Ur. Anything that comes not because of fire, la'atuye, what does that include? Avar mi'ikaro, that is lead from the mine. When you're taking lead out of a mine, when you actually mine the lead, first of all, there's radiation that's associated with it, and then the cutting of the lead that comes out, where it produces a tremendous amount of heat, and the lead itself gets very hot, and that heat could cause a burn. So any of these things that cause injury, they're called zeu shchin. That's called shchin because it's not from fire. On the other hand, ezu mechva, what is classified as a mechva? Nichve begachelet. He was burnt by a live coal. Beremetz, or with hot ashes. Besid roteach, boiling lime. Begafsit roteach, or boiling gypsum. Ubecholdavar abba machmata ur, or anything that comes from fire. Latuye chameya ur, to include waters that are heated up by fire. They're also a derivative of fire. And so there, zohi mikvah. All of those are classified as a mikvah. By the shchin and the mikvah, if it was just a burn, if it was just an injury, and then there's a healing of the wound, there's no neg over here. The question is, when the color changes, which probably indicates some sort of infection at the time, but if the color starts to change in the healing process, if something starts to happen which makes it look like a tzarat, and it starts to have a color of tzarat, that's when it becomes an issue. So if you just have a burn, or you just have an injury, and it's healing, is no issue here of Shchin, Mechbah, none of this is meaningful. It's only if something starts to happen, which causes it then to turn into a nega, which was precipitated by a wound from either a burn or from impact injury. And so then the question is, what is the status? Is it Shchin or Mechbah? And that's determined by what caused the original injury. So that's the differentiation over here. And that leads us to the question that was being posed, which is now you have a hot poker that's hitting. Is it the impact of the hit, the force of the hit is causing the injury, and therefore it's classified as Shchin? Or is it the heat of the fired up poker that's causing the injury, and therefore it would be classified as Mechbah? The truth is, and that's what the next bright is about to tell us, is both are probably happening. It's both an injury from the impact of the hit, as well as from the heat of the poker, but the question is which one comes first? Because there is a nafkamina as to which one comes first, because Tanya, Shchin u Mechbah, im Shchin kodem le Mechbah, the Shchin comes first, and then afterwards there's a Mechbah, bitel Mechbah ta Shchin. The Mechbah overrides the Shchin, and now it's classified as a Mechbah. If Mechbah kodemet the Shchin, if it's the other way around, the Mechbah came first, and then the Shchin, bitel Shchin et a Mechbah, then the Shchin overrides the Mechbah. Rashi claims that the nafkamina is whether it's classified as Shchin u Mechbah for being mitzarech. If you have another nega right next to it, that is one of these two types, the question as to whether the nega next to it is mitzarech or not will depend on what it is classified as. So what here we're saying is whatever second gives the classification to the wound that is there or the nega that is there. And so if it was Shchin was the latter of the two, then it would be classified as Shchin. If it was Mechbah was the latter of the two, it would be classified as a Mechbah. So here, when you have the poker hitting, is it the heat or the impact that goes first? And whatever happens second will be what governs the situation over here. The Ramban adds on an additional nafkamina, which is if you have to restart your count, which is that if you had something that was a Shchin, and now you have a Mechbah, it'll reset the count for a week, because now you have a new nega that is on top over there. So it also has a nafkamina. V'ocha, hechidami. So in our case, what's the situation? Kagon davabe chatzi gris shchin miikara. There was already half a gris, which is a half of a shiur of shchin on his body. Velibein shipud, and then he fired up a poker, vehikabo, and then he got hit by it. Venafak be chatzi gris acher. And right next to that other chatzi gris is this new chatzi gris. My, what's the din? Is it mitzareif or not? Chavoto kodim. Is the impact come first? Va'ati havla umevato le'chavto, and then the heat that is causing the injury, which is the mechvah, comes and is mevatel the wound from the impact, and therefore it will be classified as mechvah. Va'avle shchinu mechvah v'lo mitzarfim. Then you have a chatzi gris of shchin and a chatzi gris of mechvah. They're not mitzareif. You don't have a neg over here. Odilma havla kodim. It was the heat impact that came first. Vati chavoto umevato lei lehavlo, and then the impact of the poker hitting him comes and wipes out or overrides the wound from the heat and from the fire, and then it would be classified as shchin. Vavile shchin u'shchin, and then it would be shchin, and the original one was shchin umitzareif, and then the two chatzi gris come together to get you a full gris from the minimum shiur that you need for tzarat. So that's the nature of the question. Tashma. So why we brought this over here is because of the similarity to the statement that was made by Amar Rabbi Zeram of Shmuel before, which is what the Gemara is trying to bring over here. Tashmad Amar Rabbi Zeram of Shmuel libein sakin v'shachat ba shchitato k'sheira. The shchita is k'sheira because chiduda kodem l'libuna. The sharpness of the knife precedes the damage or the injury from the heat. Alma chavota kodim. Over there, it's clear that we see that the injury happens before the heat has impact. The sharpness of the knife, which is the equivalent of an injury, we're assuming happens first. So same thing over here. It should be that the chavata, the impact from the hit, should be meaningful before the heat. And that means that the heat will govern and will be considered to be a nega of mechvah. Where it says, very simply, chidud shiny. Dealing with a totally different issue, which is sharpness. Sharpness comes first because of its sharpness. There's a difference between something very sharp, which cuts quickly and does the injury quickly, rather than some blunted instrument, where the impact might be more either simultaneous or even after the impact of the heat that is hitting the individual. As Rashi notes over here, I mean, tov shu chad, because it is sharp, ein evelo or shibo chazak. The heat element over there isn't so strong, because in chato kodem lavlo, and therefore the cut or the injury clearly happens before the heat or the flame hits him, because of the fact that the sharpness makes it that there's a very minute point that's causing the damage, which has very little heat until it gets deeper into the individual or gets closer to the individual. Tashma, so let's try learning from this. Libein shiput, bikabo, person heats up a poker and then hits with it. Nido mishum michvatesh. It's considered to be michvatesh. From that you would conclude that the impact happens first and the fire happens second, because you said whatever happens second governs what the status of the nega is. The fact that it calls it michvatesh tells you that it thinks that the impact from the hit takes place first and then the fire happens afterwards. Amo chavoto kodim. Again, that shows you that the impact is first. Hatom nami de barze mivras. He punctured him. He stabbed him. Dainu chidud, which is the equivalent of something sharp going in. So the Gemara says you can't bring any proof from that braita, because maybe that braita is not speaking about impact from a hit, where you're taking something blunt and hitting the individual, but rather it's something very sharp. It may not be sharp like a knife, where you're going back and forth, but it can be sharp like a lance, a dagger, a dart that has a point to it, and that way the point goes in first, and there we agree. When it's something sharp, we all agree that sharpness precedes the heat that comes afterwards. That would be the simple way to explain it, but Rashi says over here, because you are stabbing, because you're using something sharp, you don't need to do it with any force. And therefore there is no chavata over here, there is only hevel, and that's why it's negdar ke michvat esh, not because you had chavata and then michvat esh, which would be the way that we explain it, the simple way to understand it, but rather there is no chavata at all. And that's, therefore the only option is michvat esh, because shkin's not even on the table, because there was no chavata, there was no impact or force that was used over here. The question is, when you have a blunted instrument, whether it's the heat or the impact of the instrument that is taking place first, and the Gemara leaves that as an unresolved issue. Right? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, Sakin shel uvadat kochavim mutar lishchot ba, vasur lachtoch ba basar. This is a knife that is shemishamshim ba korbanot shel uvadat kochavim. It's a knife that's used in the presentation of korbanot in Avodah Zarah. So it's called mishamshei Avodah Zarah, which generally are serim bahana'a. So since it's a sur ba'ana'a, you shouldn't be able to use it. It says here that you're allowed to use it for shechita. You're not allowed to use it to cut up the meat. The reason you're allowed to use it for shechita is because mutar lishchot ba, because it's mikalkelhu. You're causing damage. You're doing something that is destructive. As Rashi says over here, ve'ein zu hana'a. Because while it was alive, it was worth more. While it's alive, it can provide the following three things. It can produce offspring. It can do work. And it can produce milk. It can produce other items that grow on the body of the animal that can be used, for instance, wool. All these are available to you while the animal is alive. When the animal's dead, there's only one thing that's available to you, and that's basar. So it's worth more while it's alive. So since you're doing something that's a kukul, you can use it for shechita, because there is no hana'ah in doing such. It's interesting that if you look at Tosfot over here, he says, despite the fact that it's classified as mikalkel when you do the shechita, the gabei Shabbat is considered to be mitakein, and you are chayav for melechet shechita on Shabbat. And Shabbat, we know, you're only chayav when it's something that is constructive in nature. So Tosafot distinguishes between the case here and the case in Shabbat. He says, by the case of Shabbat, you need malachet machshevet. You have to have malacha, where the intent of what you want to do is accomplished, and that it isn't constructive in nature. He says, in shechita, that's what you have. You intended to do shechita, that's what you want to happen. It's constructive in the sense that it makes the animal kasher to eat over here. That's enough to make you chayav b'Shabbat. On the other hand, in terms of hana'ah, when you're looking at this on a more holistic level, whether you benefited from the shechita, or whether it was worth more while it was alive and then dead, there you can claim that there was no hana'ah over here. And so it'll turn out to be, this is one of the few places where melechet machshevet is the chumrah. Generally, melechet machshevet by Shabbat is a kula that releases you from obligations because it's a higher standard with regards to doing things or engaging in malacha. There are only a couple of exceptions to that. In the Gemara, the only exceptions in the Gemara in Bavar Kama, where it's Zoreh, La Ruach, where for a Nizikin it's considered to be Groma, but on Shabbat it's considered to be Melechet Makshevet. And the Tosfot over here brings a similar type of idea, where Melechet Makshevet is actually the Chumrah over here. On the other hand, Asur Lachtoch Babasar, you can't use it to cut meat, because Mitakenu, that is something that is positive. If you cut up the pieces properly, then the pieces are going to be more manageable, people will buy them, they'll be more appealing, and the meat will be available to you. So that is Hana'ah, and you can't get Hana'ah from Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. So since you have here an Isser Hana'ah, Shchita, which is Mikalkel, is fine. Chituch Basar, which is something that is constructive in nature, that is problematic. Amarova, Pa'amim is Shashuchet Asur. There's sometimes, even by Shchita, it's problematic, and that is B'Misukenet, when the animal is teetering on life and death. It's about to die. So if you are successful at doing the shkita, you actually save the animal because by shechting the animal at that point, it still is kasher. Had the animal died from whatever sickness or illness it has, at this point, it would have been a nevela. So you're saving it from being a nevela. In that case, it's actually constructive in nature. Umechateich mutar. And there's sometimes we're cutting up the basar, is something that's mutar, ba'atme dekaimon lukurbano. When you have nice cuts of meat that are significant and look great, which usually are given as gifts to other people, or gifts for people of significance or royalty, so if you have those types of pieces, and then you take the knife to cut it down to smaller pieces, over there that's mikalkel. You're actually reducing the value of the item by cutting it up into smaller pieces, and therefore it would be mikalkel, and it wouldn't be a problem to use a knife of avodah zarah. V'tibuklei mishom shamnunit de'isura. Wait a minute. Okay, you dealt with the problem of isur hana'ah, that this is misham shei avodah zarah. What about the fact that this knife is used in non-kosher processes? And that means the knife has non-kosher balua absorbed into it, and that would be a problem of kashrut. And here the Gemara speaks about shamnunit, which we've discussed in Avodah Zarah and other places, which means that the fats from the knife's cutting of the meat, they get absorbed into the knife, or they're on the knife, and then they impart flavor to whatever else you cut with it. And since you have shamnunit, that fat, on the knife from non-kosher animals, how can you use it for a kosher animals? Where it says, b'chadasha, it's a brand new knife. Brand new knife, then there's no problem of kashrut with it. Where it says, chadasha, it's a brand new knife, ben the Rabbi Yishmael, ben the Rabbi Akiva, misham she'avodot kochabim hein. This is something in the service of Avodah Zarah, umisham she'avodot kochabim, in an asirim ad she'yavdu. When it comes to misham she'avodot zarah, they are not restricted until you actually utilize them, until you actually put them into service. There is a machloka between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva with regards to real Avodah Zarah. If you designate something to be Avodah Zarah, do you actually have to worship it in order for it to be Asur Ba'ana'ah? Or even if you don't worship it, it's already automatically Asur Ba'ana'ah because you designated the Avodah Zarah. That's Machlok Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva. What the Gemara says is that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, even though they disagree about Avodah Zarah, by Mishamshei Avodah Zarah, things that are used in service of the Avodah Zarah, there they both agree that until it's used, it's not Asur Ba'ana'ah. And that means if you have a new knife that was never used as a mishamshei avodah zarah, then it's not a problem b'isur hana'ah, because it was never used for that purpose. So how can the answer to the question be that we're dealing with a new knife, and that's why there's no kashrut issue? So ibay deima, the pasuk bey gavza laborat kochabim, said no problem. They utilize the knife not to cut something that would impart fat or flavor to it, but they cut something like wood for the Avodah Zarah. So it was used in Shimush Avodah Zarah, but it was never used in a non-kosher context. And therefore, the only question here with regards to the knife is, it's Isur Hana'ah, and it's, are you doing something that's Mikalkel or Mitakein? On the other hand, as far as the Kashrut issue, that we don't worry about because it was never used for something non-kosher. It was only used for wood or dry goods where there was no absorption from whatever was being done. V'ibay Teima B'Yishana. It is a case where it was an older kli, shelibna be'or, that you fired it up in order to kasher it, meaning that it was kashered. That's the answer. Both instances were leaving an Isra Hana'awir, either because it was used for Misham Shevot Azara, but not for things that would cause absorption into the knife. Or, even if it was used to things that would cause absorption into the knife, you could do Libon to kasher the knife, and then kashrut is not an issue anymore. Thus, right over here, it's actually on the previous Amud, discusses a stira between the Gemara and Pesachim and the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, which we discussed in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, which is that the Gemara here and in Avodah Zarah seems to indicate that Libun is necessary in order to kasher a knife or metallic objects, whereas in the Gemara and Pesachim, it sounds like it's enough to do Hagala. So why is it in one place that Hagala is enough, and the other place we require Libun? So the answer the Bali Tosafot give is the purpose or the usage of the item. If it's an item that is exposed to the fire on a regular basis, like a grill that is sitting on top of the fire, then there, Libun is the only way to kasher it. On the other hand, if it's a utensil that sometimes goes in into the fire and out of the fire, but doesn't really sit in the fire, over there, Hagolah, it would be sufficient in order to kasher the item. Although others, like the Ramban, just say that this is an earlier stage of the Gemara, and that Gemara is going to back away from this position later on, and therefore it does not provide a stira. And then the Bali Tosafot bring a machloki between the brothers, the Rivam, Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Meir, and the Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbi Yaakov, and be Rabbi Meir, and that's why the Rabbeinu Tam is called the Rabbeinu Tam and not the Rivam, because his older brother was the Rivam. And they argue about when you buy knives from Ovdei Kochavim that were used, old knives that they'd used for a long time, what do you need to do in order to kasher them? The Rivam suggested you had to do Libun, because they used the knives sometimes to take meat off the fire, off the grill, and they're exposed to fire. Or they use the knives to fix the candles, and they're in the flame of the candle, and there's chalev that they're burning in order to have fuel for that flame. And so that's non-kosher oil, non-kosher fat that's there, and you put the knife in flame, so it requires libun. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam says you only need hagalah, because those aren't the real usage of the knife. Those were happens. It might have happened. It was a happenstance when it did happen. It's not the regular usage of the knife. And because it's not the regular use of the knife, it'd be sufficient with hagalah. Although the Rabbeinu Tam then gives another reason, which is that whatever would have come out in the next time that you cook will come out in the first hagalah anyway. And so if you're only going to use it for hagalah, then if you do hagalah to it, then it should be sufficient to remove whatever's there. Tosafot rejects that logic and says that's just not true. It might be that there are certain materials, if they absorb so much that they're always polite. We say that by kli cheres. Maybe we'll say the same thing that by metal that absorbed through fire, even if you do hagalah, maybe the next time you do hagalah again and you boil it up again, it'll be polite isur, because the isur doesn't come out unless you put it into the flame. But nevertheless, there's this machloki between the Rivam and the Rabbeinu Tam as to whether you require libun or hagalah to kasher knives when those knives are generally used not in the flame, but there is a chance that they might have been in some situations used in a flame, but it's not the regular usage of that utensil to be put in a flame. The Rabbeinu Tam says you just need hagalah, and the Rivam, his older brother, says you require libun in order to kasher them. Itmar. So now we have another memra. Shochet b'sakin shel ovdei kochavim. Someone who shechs with a non-Jew's knife. Rav amar kolef. Rav says you have to peel off the area where the shechita was done. For Rav amar chanamar mediach. You just have to rinse the area. And the hadacha over here is in distinction to shtifa. As opposed to shtifa, which is simply a rinse, hadacha includes more than just rinsing. Of course, rinsing with scrubbing. So this is an offshoot of the previous question of the Gemara, which is clear from the previous Gemara that if the knife was non-kosher, it would be problematic. The only reason it wasn't problematic is either because you kashered the knife, or because it was a brand new knife that was never used for something that was non-kosher. But that implies that if you did shechita with a non-kosher knife, you would have a problem. How big a problem? That's a machloket Rav and Rav Bar Chana. Rav says it's a skin-deep problem, and therefore you need to collate, you need to peel off the top layer of whatever was touched by the knife. Rabbi Bar Chana says it's a completely external problem, and you can just rinse it down and get rid of the problem. Lema b'hakam iflige, let's say their machloket is premised on this. Tamar sabar beit ha-shechita tzonein. That the area of the beit ha-shechita, when you're doing it, is considered to be a cold area. And in general, we have a rule that absorption only happens when there's heat added. When something sits in cold items, you just need to rinse it off. It doesn't have any absorption. Heat causes absorption because it causes an expansion of the molecules in the item and it allows for the flavor to be imparted to whatever the item is. And so that's the transference of flavor happens through heat. So now the question is, the Beit HaShechita, the area where you do Shechita, is that considered to be hot or is that considered to be cold? Maybe that's their difference of opinion. Rabbi Bar Chana believes that the Beit HaShechita is tzonein, it's cold, and by cold you just need to rinse it off and everything's fine. That's what you do. Umar Salva and Rav holds Beit HaShechita roteach. It's considered to be hot. And therefore there'll be absorption from the knife, skin deep absorption, and therefore you have to kolef, you have to peel off the top layer, because the knife came into contact with that. Umar says, lo, the kuliyama Beit HaShechita roteachu. Everybody agrees that the Beit HaShechita is hot, and therefore there is absorption. Madamar kolef shapir. The one who says, Rav, who says you have to peel off that area makes sense because of the absorption from the heat. Madamar midiach, Rav Bar Chana, who says you just have to rinse it. I did the 3 days simanim lafukedam lo bale. Because the simanim are so busy exuding dam from them, they don't have time to absorb. It's a one-way street. And when we're speaking about simanim over here, it doesn't literally mean the simanim. It means the arteries, the veins, it means the whole area of the Beit HaShechita where a lot of the blood flows through, and therefore they're polate. They're the ones that are exuding the blood and are not going to be absorptive in that situation. We have a similar din with regards to things like liver and hearts where they're put on the open flame or on the roasting fire where the blood comes out of them and we're able to kasher them. The Gemara asks the same question. Why don't we worry about the blood itself that's coming out of them and that it's reabsorbed? The answer is that it's so busy being polate, it's so busy exuding the blood from inside, that it has no time for absorption. Or in essence, it's a one-way flow, and the flow is out and not in. And similar over here, the Shechita is done by the Simanim. Simanim are so busy expelling blood from them that they have no ability to take in or to absorb that which is there, and that's why you only need to do a Hadacha. Igadamre, some suggest that Kuliyama Beit HaShechita Tzonein. Everybody agrees that the Beit HaShechita is considered to be a cold area. Manda mar mediach, the one who says you rinse it off. Shapir, we understand why, because it's cold and there's no absorption. Just surface touching, and then you just rinse the surface. Manda mar kolef, Rav, who says you have to peel off the top layer. Agab duchacha de sakina bola. Because of the pressure of the sakin, it causes absorption. Which means that there are two ways to impart flavor. One way to impart flavor, as we said until now, is heat. If it's heated up or something's hot, then there's absorption of flavor. The other way to have absorption is through pressure. If there's a lot of pressure on the item, then whatever's on the item will be wiped off or absorbed into the other item that is being cut. So if you hear about the knife, the flavor that's completely embedded inside the knife, that's not going to be exuded without heat. That won't happen in a cold situation. But the knife itself has fats or oils on the surface from the fact that it was used for non-kosher items. Those fats and oils on the surface will rub off on another item. That's what makes Rabbi Bar Chana require at least hadacha to rinse it off. But Rav says you need more than that. You need kolef as well because the pressure that is placed over there causes not only for it to wipe off on the skin, but also to be absorbed into the skin or absorbed into whatever layers are there. And that's why you need to be kolef. You need to cut off the top layer, according to Rav, because there's absorption through pressure. Tosfot over here discusses two issues. The first of which is, Tzarich lamid biyiduim bashu bat yoma. That you have to know that this knife was used in the last 24 hours. It says if the knife wasn't used in the last 24 hours, then it's a notein tam lifgam. It is imparting a negative flavor. And notein tam lifgam, we don't worry about that type of absorption. In addition to that, we have a principle that we saw many times in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that stam kelim are inam b'nei yoman. The default status of any kli is an assumption it was not used in the last 24 hours. So had we had no other information, Tosafot says we wouldn't worry about it, even if it was a non-kosher knife, because it wasn't used in the last 24 hours. And even if we don't know it was used in the last 24 hours, we can assume the default is it wasn't used in the last 24 hours. So that's what Tosafot says over here. You have to assume that this is a case where it's bat yomo. They know it was used in the last 24 hours, and that's what's causing the problem over here. That's one thing Tosafot mentions. The second thing Tosafot mentions is, because of pressure, we say there's absorption over here. So then he quotes, Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir haya matzrich. Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir is the Rivam. He's the brother of the Rabbeinu Tam and the brother of the Rashbam. He's the third brother. They are the sons of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir who's married to Rashi's daughter. And these are the three grandsons of Rashi from the Rabbeinu Meir, the Rivam, the Rashbam, and the Rabbeinu Tam. So this is the Rivam that he's quoting over here. He says, "Mitokach la'chashini krua chelev min abeima." He says, since this is true, after you've cut out the chelev from the beima, the usur fats from the animal, when you've cut them out, tzarich lachzor leklof b'chol mekamot shemechatech b'sakin. You have to go back then and peel off the top layer of anywhere where that knife went. Mishum debala min achelev agav duchaka desakina. Because of the pressure when you're cutting those fats on the knife, that means the knife absorbed from that chelev. And if it absorbed from that chelev, it can also impart that flavor to somebody else through duchaka. And therefore you have to peel off the top layer of anything that the knife came into contact with because of the absorption of that shamnunit from the pressure. And then Tosva goes on and says, "V'yesh limtzo tam sh'aminhag shalanu sh'nagu lahakel." What's the reason behind our minhag that we don't worry about the Rivam says? Rivam seems to make a logical argument here based on a Gemara. How come we don't worry about that at all? He says, "V'dilma beita shchita davka shiroteach tzat mahani duchaka desakina." So Tosva says it's a tziruf over here. Even if you believe that the neck of the Behema is considered to be tzonein, it's not completely tzonein. It's not ice cold, the neck of the Behema. It may not be boiling hot, but it's not ice cold. And therefore the combination of the heat, which may not be roteach, but it's a heat, plus the duchaka, because of the pressure, the two together are able to create absorption. But absent that, there would be no absorption. So that means in the case where you're cutting the chelev out of the behema, there might be duchaka, but it's cold, and it might even be ice cold at that point in time, and therefore you can do it without having any absorption. That's how Tosva tries to explain our practice versus what seems to be a pol yotze, a derivative of what the Gemara says that the Rivam suggests over here, and why we don't worry about what the Rivam suggests. Right, then the Gemara continues and says, sakin treifa. If you have a sakin that was used to shecht a treifa, then what is the status if you use it for shkita now? Pligi ba rav acha ravina. Another machloket amoraim. Chad amar bichamin. In order to kasher the knife, you have to do hagalah. You have to put it into boiling hot water. Chad amar bitzonein. And one of them says that you put it in cold, meaning that you just need to rinse it off. You just need to clean it off. The hagalah would imply that there's absorption that is taking place. So that's either because the beit hashchita is considered to be hot, or because of the duchaka, because of the pressure that's there. And then the one who says that you only need rinsing is obviously believes that the beit hashchita is tzonein, and this sakin is not absorbing, even though there might be duchaka over there. So that's the difference in opinion. And the Gemara says over here, behilchata afilu bitzonein. The halacha is that even rinsing it off is sufficient in order to take care of the problem. So now, Rashi notes over here that the Gemara is conclusive in this case and not in the previous case. Why is it so obvious to the Gemara that here, hilchata bitzonein, and in the case before by the non-kosher knife, we didn't know whether you have to be koleif or whether you had to do hadacha? Shouldn't the two be correlated? And so Rashi says over here, v'gabi sakin shel heter hu, the pasak hilchata lehetera, that when you have a sakin of heter, that's when we have a lokal heter, to lo itzar bibliazu, because it never became a sur with this absorption. Vikashehu livloa, and it is hard, and therefore it doesn't absorb aliyadei reticha, through heating. Aval gabe sakin di isura, shalov de kochavim. In the case when you're dealing with a sakin that is a sur, miplukta de la'el, lo posok. There they didn't come to a conclusion. Mipnesha sakin asura vabasar rach livloa. So the difference in the cases is what is absorbing and what is being polite. In the case of the treifa, the animal is the problem. We're worried about the knife and the absorption of the knife. The knife is a hard material, and therefore it does not absorb easily. And that's what's being said by the Gemara over here. The halacha is that even rinsing it off is sufficient because the knife was hard and the treifa was trying to impart flavor to it, but it was unsuccessful because the knife is hard and does not absorb easily. With heat, it will absorb, but absent the heat, it won't absorb. That's why we pass it over here, hilchata ketzonein. That has no bearing on the previous case by the Sakin of Dei Kochavim, because there it's just the reverse. The knife has the flavor in it, and it's imparting the flavor to the behema. The behema is something that is a soft material. Soft materials are more apt to absorb. And since they're more apt to absorb, over there we might have a different din. Maybe duchaka over there has impact. Or maybe the heat over there has more impact. Whatever it is, it's a different case because of the reverse of the transference of flavor. And for that reason, the Gemara here concludes that this is Hilchata Bitzonei. The previous case, the Gemara left it unresolved. And Rashi early on said, Kevin Dolo Ifsech Hilchata. Since we have no Psak Halacha, the Sura Doraita, and we're dealing with an Iser Doraita, which is non-kosher items being absorbed there, Adin and the Chumrah, we have to go the Chumrah, and that means we have to be Kolef, like Rav, because of the fact that it's a Safek, and Safek Doraita, and we would go the Chumrah. It says, even though that's the Halacha, V'chatchila lo yishchot. You should not use a non-kosher knife, lichatchila, because it says, hashochet. One who did shchita, either has to rinse it off or be koleif. That's all bidiavad. But that means lichatchila, we don't want you doing this at all. So that's why Rashi makes a clear distinction between the two cases, and as to why the Gemara is able to conclude in one of them, and not in the other. Gemara says, ve'ika blita de parsa lemichpere lo tzarich. If one has, blita is from the word baloi, which means worn down. The parsa, as Rashi says, getargaminan masach hapetach parsa. So it's something that is a woven piece of material that's used as a parochet, a vilon between areas. And it's usually a much harder and thicker type of weave that once it's worn down becomes extremely hard and abrasive. And therefore the michpere, if you wipe it, you rub it against the knife, it accomplishes the same thing as rinsing it. So you can opt for a different way of dealing with this, which is that we're trying to remove whatever's on the surface of the knife. So you can remove whatever's on the surface of the knife by hadacha, by rinsing it off, or you can do it by using something abrasive that will take off whatever's on the surface of the knife. Tosfot over here notes that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah speaks about the cleaning of a knife or the kashing of the knife by putting it into hard earth 10 times, which, as we discussed in Avodah Zarah, is mistakenly assumed to be a way to kasha the knife. The only thing that it does is it creates the equivalent of an abrasion that allows the external stuff that's on the knife to be removed. It doesn't kasha the knife. It removes any of the fats that are on the surface of the knife. And the Baal Tosafot say, why over here is Tzonein rinsing it enough for that? Whereas in the case in Avodah Zarah, you need to put it into the ground 10 times. So he says that there's a difference over here, because over here it happened be'ekrai ba'alma. It was a happenstance. You normally shechted the animals, they were het there. In this one instance, it turns out that it was a treifa. So once in a blue moon you have a treifa, that's something that can be easily taken off. If you just simply rinse it off or use something abrasive once, that'll be fine. In the case in Avodah Zarah, which means we had a knife of a non-Jew that was used multiple times for non-kosher items, and therefore there's a ton of buildup on the knife. And the only way to remove that is to do ni'itzah 10 times, to put it into abrasive, hard earth 10 times, to remove that which is on the surface of the knife. So the difference is in the usage beforehand that causes the isur. The more you use it, the more abrasive and the more strict we will make the necessity for removing it. And that's why you need ni'itzah 10 times, versus the case where it happened just there was a treifa when you were shefting. There we only require a tzonein or abrasive cloth just to rub over it to remove that which is on it. Rabbeinu Tam makes a different suggestion that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is speaking about something that had absorption through heat, versus this would only had absorption through tzonein. The Baal Tosafot go on to disprove that distinction that the Rabbeinu Tam makes, and therefore they reject that explanation of the difference between our Gemara and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Volmanda amar bichamin. But one who says over here requires it to be chamim, my taima. What's the reason? Mishum de kabbala isura. Because it was boleya isura. The hetera, nami bala, eber minachai. Why is this unique to a case of treifa? It should be true in any shchita case. In any shchita case, the animal starts off as being asur because of eber minachai, and the shchita is what's matir it to be eaten. In the process of cutting through the shchita, whatever causes absorption for whatever you said before in terms of a treifa into the knife, should also cause absorption from an animal that's a sur be'evir min achai. The shechita in the end is matirit. But before you get to the point where you're finishing the shechita, there's evir min achai that is now being absorbed into the knife. Gemara says, emat bala. When does it absorb? The chei chayma. When it gets hot or when it gets heated up. Emat kachayma. When does it get hot? The chei gamra shechita. It's only towards the end of the shechita. Meaning that the buildup of the heat from the Beit HaShechita and the absorption only happens towards the end of the process of Shechita. By the time you reach the end of Shechita, Haishata Hetera Hava. By that time, it's already Hetera. So by the case of Treifa, where it'll never become Heter, then even at the end of Shechita, you're going to have a problem of absorption, because if it's hot at that point, you think the Beit HaShechita is Roteach, then it's going to cause absorption, and you're being absorbing from something that is a Treifa. On the other hand, if you're doing it on an animal that's kasher, by the time you get to the heating or the roteach aspect of it, that is at the point where the animal already changed over from Eiver Min Achai to Heter. So at that point, it's absorbing Heter, which isn't an issue. And that's how you'll differentiate between a case of Heter and a case of Treifa. Tosfos points out that over here, that even though, as we just noted, that a sakin kshera, according to everyone over here, would clearly just need sonein to be wiped off, because they argue by a sakin treifa, they don't argue by a sakin kshera, which would seem to indicate that sonein would be enough. He says, I know the dak lenin shchot ba'pam acheret. That's only true if you want to shecht with it again. Even though there's tons of dam on it, still, there's tons of blood in the area of the beit ha'shechita from the be'ima atzma, below balalei. And we still don't say that it absorbs it. And that the blood of the animal itself is not reabsorbed into the basar of the animal. We shouldn't treat a simanim the float dam, because it's so busy exuding dam that it doesn't have any time to absorb the blood. Avalachtoch baroteach. If you want to use it then to cut something that's hot, afilu shachat baksheira asur. If you shechted something that's kasher, then you need to kasher the knife before you can use it, because there's at least a certain amount of absorption that takes place over here, and because of either duchaka or the chamimut, there's a certain amount of absorption. That absorption is problematic in the case when you're just using heat as the conveyance method of flavor, and so therefore you'd have to catch the knife before you use it for something hot, whereas just to do for shechita, rinsing it off would be sufficient. So even if the dam is still on the knife, you can use it for another shechita. But for other items, in order to use it, then you'd have to rinse it off to adacha and hagalah in order to kasher it. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Merav. Hatabach tzarich shlosha sakinim. The butcher, now in their day, the butcher is not like what we say today. There, the tabach, a butcher, was really a butcher, which means that he did shechita, and he also cut up the meats, and he did the nikor, meaning that the whole process from beginning to end was done by a single individual. He's really what we would call the shochet today. That's what they call the tabach. He needs achat sheshochet ba. He needs one knife to shecht with. That knife is what we call kli, that is muksa makma sarun kis. The Gemara in Shabbat tells us that there are certain types of things that are muksa because you only use them for their designated purpose. The Gemara brings as an example an izmel, a knife that's used for brit milah. The mohel will only use it for a brit milah and for no other purpose. So therefore on Shabbat, where the brit milah would be asur, to be asur to use it, you can't say I want to cut something else with it and therefore I can pick it up. It's a klishim lachto li isur and I need it b'tzarech kufo tzarech mekomo. It's not classified as a klishim lachto li isur because it's something that, because of its unique purpose, you wouldn't use it ela im kain for that purpose itself. And then shechita knife is the same way. Because you need it to be perfectly smooth and you need it to be absolutely fine and sharp, people will only use their shechita knives for the purpose of shechita. But otherwise, they won't use them for anything else. So that's a given that he needs a knife for shechita. V'chach mechatech ba'basar. One to quarter up the animal, to cut up the meat. V'chach mechatech ba'chalavim. And another one to cut the fats off from the animal, the non-kosher fats that need to be removed from the animal. V'likin le'chado. The hell of them have one knife. Now when we say one knife, shechita knife is separate. That is a given that he needs a separate knife for that. But speaking about the cutting of the basar and the cutting of the chelev, why don't you have one knife? V'lichtoch ba'basar, v'hada lichtoch ba'chalavim. Let him first quarter the animal, cut it up into pieces, and then only afterwards take out the chelev from the animal. And that way, the Isser will happen after you already cut the basar, it won't be an issue. And then obviously he would have to rinse it off or clean it before he went to the next animal. But because there's a gap, that will remind him that he needs to do something with the knife before he processes the next animal. It's very simple. We're not so certain he's going to do it in the right order. He might do the chalev first and then do the basar, and then you'll run yourself into a problem. So why don't you worry about it now too? He has two knives. He has one knife that does chalev, one knife that does basar. He'll mix the knives up. Just like you tell me he can mix up doing the basar before the chalev, and he'll do the chalev before the basar. Why don't you say he's going to mix up the knives? He had a meat knife and a chalev knife, and he'll mix up the knives. It says, "Kevin datzrichum trei." Since we require that he has two, itlei hekera, he has a heker. The way Rashi reads it's interesting. Since we require him to have two knives, he makes sure that the knives have differences or notations in them. I would just say that the fact that you already required him two knives, in and of itself, is a heker to him that he's got to do it in a certain way. He's got to be careful. Doesn't mean the knives themselves have a heker, and it means that he himself knows to be worried about it. The fact that we made him keep two separate knives, and he's going to be particular about it and not make mistakes about it. But Rashi says oseh basiman. He actually makes a clear marking on there. He does something to indicate that the knives are separate. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Hatabach tzarich shnei kelim shel mayim. He needs two pots full of water. Echad shmediach bo basar, one in which he rinses the meat. Echad shmediach bo chalavim, and one in which he rinses the fats. V'nitkale echado, just break him, have one pot. V'nidach bo basar, v'hadar nidach bo chalavim, and let him do the meat rinsing first, and then the chalav rinsing afterwards. Gzeira, shmediach chalavim, v'karkach basar. So maybe, well, do it in reverse and do the chalavim before he does the basar. Hashtanami michlofle. So to over here, if he has two pots, he'll mix it up. The Gemara gives the same answer. Given that tzrichine tarte, itle ekeira. Since we demand that he has two different pots or two different things of water, either like Rashi says, he's going to make a siman on that to make it clear, or because we require that, he's going to be careful. He knows he needs to be careful, and therefore he won't mix them up. It's a similar issue, except by the knife you have duchuka, by the pot you don't have duchuka. Despite that, you still have the problem of the chilev sticking to the outside or the external part of the kli. So maybe that's the tzrichut over here. Amar meimar bishmid rapapa. Lo lischof inish kafle ilave bitzra. A person should not put the loins where all the fats or the usher fats are contained on top of a piece of meat. Because the da'iv tarba ubala bitzra. Because the fats heat up and liquefy, and then they're absorbed into the meat. Tosfos just qualifies this case of here and says it's only in a situation right after the nituach habasar, right after the quartering and the gutting up of the animal, because the basar is a dain cham. It's still warm. But once the basar completely cools off, none of this is an issue whatsoever. Eoche kitaritze nami doiv tarbo ubala bisra. There too, the fats heat up, and they should be absorbed in their natural state. Why don't you say the same thing over there, that there's a problem of absorption in the basar? Why is it only after you've removed it and then flipped it on top of the basar is a problem? Why not in its natural state? When the chalev is sitting on the basar, should it not also be heated up by the basar and then cause absorption into the basar? It says, karma mafsik mitatai. There is a film that is over the fats that causes a separation between the fats and the basar. And so as Rashi points out, even though this film definitely absorbs from the chalev, and that's why that film is asur, nevertheless it's enough of a barrier not allow the chalev to penetrate all the way to the basar. Even when they're on top, meaning after you've taken them off and then flipped them over onto the basar, so too over there, there's a film. Meaning the film goes completely around the chalev. If there's a film separating when they're in place, there's also a film separating when you flip them over and put them on the basar. He says that because the hand of the butcher is all over them, it causes that film to break. It's a very soft and thin film. It breaks the film, and mifatet, Rashi says it comes to the word patot oto ptitim, you should remember that from Menachot, which means to break it or crush it or crumble it. And so the hands touching the chalev causes the breaking or the dissolution of that film on top, and that's why there's a difference. When it's in the natural state and the film is there, the film protects the basar from absorbing from the fats. Once the film is broken, when you've handled it, that handling of it breaks the film, and then the fats then can cause absorption into the basar, and that's why he's warning you, after you've already cut them out, don't pile them up or don't flip them over onto the basar, because then you have a problem of absorption. All right, we're going to stop here, two lines down on the top of Tet Amud Aleph.